It's about 2:36 on Monday, St. Patrick's Day. Getting into a little bit more of our work sessions today with staff. Who would like to kick us off?
I'll go ahead and kick us off, if that's all right, Mr. Chair.
Please.
The first thing on our agenda is agritourism use opportunities in Douglas County. We've been wrestling with agritourism and the concept of agritourism for quite some time. We don't have a definition of it, and that is something that we think would help a lot of folks in the long run that are interested. We also, our focus is mostly on, from an agricultural standpoint, mostly on livestock, things of that nature. So we would kind of wanted to move into the plant world also with that. So we come to you today with a list of some things we'd like to work on, and we'd like to get your permission to proceed and put together a red line strikeout of what our regs might look like. We want to make sure we expand the existing definition of agricultural or agritourism so that we can be considered for recreation purposes, and trying to find ways to allow more in the A1 and the LRR district. We also want to create that definition of agritourism. We want to kind of come in line with the state. State has a definition of it. We'd kind of like to have one too. Currently, our related activities are not really open to the general public, so we need to make some considerations in our regulations to allow some level of activities. We also want to make sure it's scalable agritourism processes. So we want to make sure that there's a lot of things you can do as a use by right, and as the intensity of the uses increases over time, we would like to be able to add, you know, a slight permitting over time, and then also get down to USRs in the long run also, if we're going to be talking about event centers and maybe even dude ranch kind of situation.
USR?
Use by special review.
Okay.
So that's an extra layer of zoning review for certain uses.
Terrence, what
yes.
about weddings, you know, events, ceremonies, things
yes.
like that?
And that would be okay. in that USR
that's
area
USR.
Also.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the lodging potential also. And then the last of the things is thinking as staff, we'd like to put an agritourism guide together, something that might clarify our regulations, and people that are interested in doing agritourism of some sort can come to us or just get on site, get on our website and take a look to see if what they need to avail themselves of and make a plan and meet with us to talk to us a little bit about that. But we think it'd be fair if we could put that together for them because it's very confusing right now. Disjointed, and again, we don't have a definition for a land use category that is common throughout the state. So we're hoping today that we can go through our current regs, make some changes, and come back to you with a red line strikeout ready for referrals.
That's great. I would pause on campground. Obviously, we've had a lot of input after we went out on the field of Larkspur and Perry Park. Caroline's doing a masterful job of getting our biannual survey out to the public countywide to get some public feedback on camping, what that looks like. But I'd hate for you all to make red lines and put this out on referral if we're not hearing that's something that citizens want to do.
I
think it makes sense. I think there's a high demand for it.
You don't think we can... There's an inherent difference here. I mean, on one hand, we're talking on camping on public lands. This would be private.
I mean, I'm the one who I love the idea of camping in general. I just think it's important that we're cautious about how we put this out before. It's the old Roger Partridge. Let's not say we're painting the wall black until we actually do it.
Right. And right now, campgrounds are USR. Mm-hmm. Zuma's Rescue Ranch, which is one of those areas, actually came in and did a USR to add a little bit of camping to their facilities. I don't know if there's some scale.
Well, I think what we're talking about here is we were doing some park camping and campgrounds, whether it was going to be tent camping or primitive camping. And I think what we're talking about here is if they're coming in to do a training session or candle making or something with homegrown ingredients, we can have a place for their RV if they want it. And so it would be that temporary camping kind of thing, not something that would be in a park. It would be on the private ground.
Yeah, I think of can't remember the name of the itty-bitty little flowers that are very fragrant.
Lavender?
Lavender, place. We got the lavender farmers out east of Parker, and they've got land that they could probably tell folks coming in for some sort of instruction festival, we'll just go ahead and set up a tent over there. I'm just not really sure that fits with our current zoning, and yet I kind of like at least to explore what that option could look like. And it is not just a willy-nilly go set up the tent and then there are 1,000 tents and unsanitary conditions, but something we could at least start to build regs around to where it could be allowed, but only 4 tents, based on, or no more than 10 tents, something along those lines.
Scalable kind of thing, is that what it is? Kind of like if they have this and they had the facilities, like if they had enough water or enough land, maybe, is that kind of what you're thinking?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. But again, just private land, because I feel like our current conversation we're having around sandstone, a lot of that is public land.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not people's properties where, that's sort of the flip side of the coin of, hey, it's my property.
The board is okay with it. We'll give it a crack. We'll bring it back to you before we put it on the referral, and we'll see if it's too dicey to do that.
Well, I wonder, part of me, the light bulb is saying, is that potentially part of the solution to privatize camping so that our citizens who own land can benefit from that, create more opportunities and amenities for citizens that want to travel close by? I can't imagine the fees would be that much different. Maybe they would.
Well, particularly when we talk about equestrian.
Mm-hmm.
And equestrian-based camping on some of the larger properties.
Yeah.
Which right now, I guess, is just a go out there.
We've had a couple people come in and ask on smaller properties, not up where it's real forested. And when they hear they have to go through a full USR process to have, 4 or 5 campsites, they never come back because it's pretty onerous, right? Yeah. So I think a lot of it is scalable when it comes to some of these land uses. I really do.
Yeah.
And we have that equestrian camp place down south.
Yeah.
South.
Where you could come with your horse and
camp.
But again, they had enough of it that they went through the USR. They were able to. But we have a lot of small camping requests that never make it to the light of day because the process is too much.
I know you're thinking about, I love all of this. I don't know how you guys feel, but this notion of letting property owners use their property as they see fit, diverse uses, it's more capitalist, more opportunities to, provide what the market wants. What will be the reaction from people in these zone districts?
Well, I think that for, I would say, a majority of these, it would be a use by right that they already participate in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the discussion, we do allow the camping or the RV storage, it's going to be on a temporary basis. So maybe there'll be some pushback at that point. But through most of the things we want to do, there's very little permitting, and most of it's a use by right that's required. So
I think the USR. All the planning commission hearings and commissioner hearings where people have complained about light pollution and noise pollution and traffic.
Yep. Yep.
Wildfires. And even the vet clinic that you wanted to do, people had their, comments about. So I love it. I just want to make sure we're preparing.
Well, when we did the rural framework, we got some stakeholders together. And I don't know, you could always, when you're touching the rural uses, it's not bad to have, more outreach perhaps, and we could think about how to do that as part of the process, get some input.
Yeah, the flip side though is outreach before we've actually made a decision makes it also very complicated.
Yeah, that's true too. People seem to, they provide input better, I think, when you have an actual
Yes.
Something formed, a proposal. Right. Otherwise, their imaginations run wild,
totally,
you know.
Yeah.
So I think that at some point, if we drafted this, then the discussion could be, well, okay, what's a good public outreach effort to
yep.
to
mm-hmm.
get
strategy.
People informed? Yeah. Mm.
So for Commissioner Van Winkle, kind of our process. So the board had identified this right when you came on as a topic. Commissioner Teal put voice to it, and the board said, okay. So our process is, and staff sort of outlines the concept a little bit, as you see in this memo. If the board wants to proceed, then the next step would be actually to draft regulations and then come back and say, okay, here's what this concept looks like, regulatory. So there's a lot of gates from here. And then mm-hmm. the board would say, okay, if you like it, then go out and get public feedback after we've kind of drafted regulations. So this is really the first step after the board has said, Commissioner, I think one of the things the board might want to do is, Commissioner Teal, you might have comments about, does this get at what you originally were hitting when you raised this to your colleagues?
Yeah, I mean, Jeanette actually said something extremely important here. When she talks about, we've had people come in and take a look at the camping USR, and then they saw the requirements for the USR and they never came back. Mm-hmm. I think the key to everybody who's approached me about agritourism opportunity is they're starting small. Mm-hmm. And they really want to keep it small. And I feel like our regulatory schema up until now has been that barrier to entry. And to where they're like, whoa, USR and this and that, and I want to charge people 20 people to come over and look at my lavender,
mm-hmm.
you know, one weekend in June. And so the idea has just been there's a barrier to entry to do it because we have no agritourism concept. So then every conversation has always been our staff being horribly unhelpful to the applicant who really just wants to do something small, and all we're doing, we're not being horribly unhelpful at all. We're just trying to walk them through our framework.
Mm-hmm.
So to have a framework that has that low barrier to entry for a small operation that then can scale up, because you talk about having 1,000 people in with 200 horse trailers, okay, that's not small anymore. Suddenly that's a thing. That's the fairgrounds. And so, you know, something, I want to build a, 500 square foot arena. Okay, that's not small anymore. That's a undertaking. How do we, but our regulations are okay for horse arenas
mm-hmm.
of that size. We have a way in. So I'm trying to find, what is that path for, the mom and pop shop that just retired. Maybe have lived here, I'll break the story a little bit, that have lived here for 30 years and just want to make use of the acreage that they have and invite people in for it. I think something along those lines is kind of my ideas here, guys. I'm sorry I can't get much more specific than those basic ideas mm-hmm. just because I don't see... We're not the lavender capital of the world, it seems. We're not. We're kind of a horse capital of the world, but most of those are large operations. I don't see those on the small side. So, I mean, I think, that's scalable. And I like the definition, adopting the definition from the state. I don't know why we wouldn't just take it word for word and adopt it on. And then, I guess the dude ranch piece is the other thing that always stands out at me. I just can't believe we're not like the dude ranch capital of Colorado.
No one has ever come in for one. It's very odd. Mm-hmm. No one has ever requested it.
And maybe they're afraid of it.
Yeah, I don't know.
There is one thing I haven't seen here so far, which is huge to the families of Douglas County, which is like pumpkin patch. That when I hear agritourism, I get really excited because there's like one pumpkin patch in Douglas County.
Yeah.
It gets flooded with thousands of people every year.
And that's something we need to add to this list.
We used to have several, it felt like. I know my kids you just get so, you're like pumpkin patch, and they're like,
let's yes. go.
Or yeah. corn maze. Yeah, or I mean, that's all part. Like that.
Yeah, corn maze, pumpkin patch, fall.
The hay bale
outside
maze.
Fall yeah. activities for families.
Yep. Everybody I know goes to Chatfield for that, which is not our district.
Yeah, they go. It goes hand in hand, I think, with the amenities we're trying to give the families to Douglas County. That's partly indoor, partly sports, but also stuff like that. I'd love to see more of.
And then that's
perhaps that's part of Zebulon, or part of that should be part of the discussion.
Acreage.
You know, we have the greenhouse people again, kind of out by Parker, who you know, they're growing little greens, edibles, mm-hmm. for all the Tony restaurants in town.
Hmm.
And they talk about, oh no, we'd like to teach people how to do this. But then I go in, and then they're complaining about our staff, who isn't getting in their way. They're just trying to explain the regs. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, could that be an agritourism
mm-hmm. yeah.
piece that we could make room for? So I think, you know, I think the focus needs to be on scale, on the scale, and on the size and number of participants, kind of intent mm-hmm. that then we can kind of take up through some kind of, well, maybe a random scale now that with future feedback we'll find out, no, that scale's all wrong. The real break isn't 250 to 500, it's 300 to 600. That's okay, we can start somewhere, and I think that'll be half the battle, but just getting that barrier to entry a little more streamlined. That's the feedback I've been getting from our residents.
And we did do a couple years now, we've done a very small pumpkin patch through the entertainment event permit process, which is pretty easy. Mm-hmm. So we have the ability to, I think it's just, we don't have a good definition, umbrella definition. Is it a cultural facility? Is it an ag use? Is it educational? You know, what is it? And I think we could add a lot of clarity and then match up scale to process kind of with some of the framework we already have, you know, USR and lights and things like that.
In the manufacturing.
Yeah.
You know, you want to teach people how to do those things. Yeah. That needs to be included in here also. And it should be a use by right.
Yeah.
It should not be, unless it's 5,000 people. You know, at one time doing something, then we'll have to talk.
Yeah, I think about the times that we've done the Sonoma and the Napa trips.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I don't know how many of you guys have done that kind of thing, but, I mean, some of these little wineries that you go to, mm-hmm. They are a driveway, the house that you're not supposed to go into, and then a pagoda.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And
pagoda, that's a word. I'm going to hold on, I have to look that up.
Gazebo.
Actually, no. Pagoda? I was thinking gazebo. Not pagoda.
I went to public school.
I got the wrong word. Sorry. But, cool. I mean, that's all it is. And then, of course, you have Francis Ford Coppola's mansion.
Sure.
So, I mean, but then you kind of got everything in between. And, I mean, God, I think of the places that were like barns. And just kind of, again, being able to think of the scale along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Or pagodas.
But tours are part of this. I think that there's a large area that we can define as a use by right and very easily allow people to activate and to undertake. Then there's some of the other things like the wedding venues and some of the larger scale arenas or amplified music or something like that for a big event that we might have to talk about more intensive permitting on. But that definition and that write-up is going to make it all very clear, or at least as clear as we can make it, because right now it's not. So I think that's a major step for
and
us.
The board will have something to look at. I mean, what we put together, you can see if it fits with what you were thinking, too. So that's, you know, you can say, this is a little off, or maybe it needs to be a little more fine-grained. I think we can come forward for your...
I like it, guys.
Okay. All right.
So,
great action on this.
We need a motion to proceed with drafting.
Any additional questions from the board on this? If not, I will accept the motion.
To please the board, I have a motion to direct staff to move forward on developing a regulatory framework for agritourism in Douglas County, Colorado, to include adopting, if not verbatim, the state's agritourism definition. One of our own that is very similar.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, so we have a first and second on the floor. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And that carries unanimously. Thanks. Very good. What's next?
Next, if it please you, Mr. Chair, process and regulatory streamlining. Janet and I have worked with our teams. Come on up, Janet. To work on coming up with some ideas for streamlining, and some of those were brought up at our retreat, and others we've discovered just recently. So we'd like to kind of share with you some of the concepts that we'd like to be able to begin to address. From my standpoint, we have some land use regulation changes and also some procedural changes that we would like to implement. Is it all right if I proceed? Is there anything else you'd like to say at this point? Okay. First is the subdivision resolution for Article 10, and it's the parkland dedication requirements. I think we all understand that we have a very antiquated approach to parkland and school dedication requirements that needs to be simplified. And if we simplify it by turning it into a fee, that would be in line with what our neighbors do. And so when people come in, instead of going back and forth on appraisals and trying to figure out what the proper value is, we use a fee that we develop every couple years, stay in line with Colorado revised statutes, and just have that be what they use. That would save so much time for our applicants if we can do something like, and a lot of cost, because you know every time you engage in a back and forth conversation on what the appraised value of something is, it costs money to redevelop that and negotiate it. The second one, is it all right if I proceed, Commissioner?
Yeah, I'm just trying to follow.
Okay, no problem. Land use process staff guidance. This is a procedural endeavor on staff's part. What we've found quite a bit of the time is both big and small guy developers come in and are overreacting to things that are in the regulations that they don't necessarily need to react to. And we want to be able to help them navigate the regulations in a way that will minimize their cost and time effort to be able to get something before you for approval. Go ahead and stop me if you have questions. This is something that we, you know, don't do a lot right now because we're trying to let them drive their applications. But there are some things, for instance, Sterling Ranch listed out huge comprehensive master plan revisions and assessments, and it was really not necessary. But they did it because they thought they were, you know, doing what was necessary to get their project approved. So we'd like to be able to take them through that, hold their hand through it, in other words, and help them pick the way through. Final plats. We brought this up to the board before. Final plats and SIA, IGAs could be done administratively. And this would require a regulatory change to the subdivision resolution. The final plat is focused on a lot of crossing the T's, dotting the I's, engineering, SIA, IGA checks and agreements. So we were thinking that maybe if we wanted to save about a month of time and significant cost for an applicant, we could do that administratively between Janet's department and my department. Process overlaps. Timing is so important for developers nowadays. The costs associated with carrying capital and, you know, keeping workers on equipment located correctly is really expensive, and a lot of folks ask us to stack process up. And we think that if they are willing to take that risk, they should be allowed to do it. And it'll save them a lot of time and money. And time is everything with the developers at this point. You know, we could use no hold harmless letters. We could even just say, if you agree, you know, we're gonna go ahead and process these things all at the same time. And so you layer them up, maybe a little bit off, but you layer them up and you get after it.
Hey.
So that's one we'd like to do. That's kind of a procedural also, won't require any changes to our regs, just how we operate. Another procedural one that we have is site improvement plan requirements. We're trying to identify the requirements in a site improvement plan can be waived by public works directors. Planners, engineers routinely assist the applicants in streamlining their application timeframes. And again, it's not necessarily important for them to do all these things, and so we can help them put the things together in the right way and save, you know, significant time and cost. Once again, don't have to redraw, don't have to renegotiate. We just get it right the first time. And then the last of the ones we're looking at is PD amendments overall. We think that we can do some more administrative work with PD amendments so that if the board has approved a PD and likes everything that's going into it and someone wants to make a hooch and scooch or a language change, they can come in and do that for us. With that, we can do it administratively. It'll save them a lot of time drawing, things of that nature. So that was the ones we wanted to work through. Janet, did you want to?
Sure. Pretty straightforward. The building department's been working with IT to develop some software, so it coincides with our existing software, that would provide for an online portal permitting submittal process. It'll also have an AI checklist for So we're dabbling into the AI stuff. So building's all set to do that. This update will streamline our permitting, plan review, and inspection workflows, aligning with processes that some of our neighboring jurisdictions have been using. And we think it'll definitely improve customer satisfaction and expedite some of our permitting processes. The other thing that building, I think we're almost done with it, but we want to let you know that we're doing paperless permitting right now. Before we had, you had to sign this paper, get the signature, and then you had to do this signature. But right now, building's working to make the mechanical, roofing, and some of our electrical permits completely paperless in the first quarter of 2025. And Matt can probably let us know, but it might be completed already.
Yeah, it is near completion.
So we think that'll help our customers as well. One of the things that we've done in the engineering division, engineering back the pilot project for early release of model home building permits. In 2022, engineering, building, and the attorney's office worked with several of our developer and builders to develop a pilot project that would allow early release of model home building permits prior to initial acceptance. Per our SIA now, our subdivision improvement agreement, you have to have initial acceptance before you can get a building permit of any kind. That way we don't get, you know, a Perry Park scenario again. But the builder said that it would help if they could at least get their model homes released early in the process. And it's a lower risk because they're the owners. They have to adhere to certain requirements. They can't pull a CO because the CO allows them to sell the lot and stuff. So we've worked through that process. We've been doing it now for several years. And we would like to just drop the pilot and just let it be for everybody out there. So if any builder can go through this model home permit process. So we're proposing to do that. We're poised to implement it today, if you guys are okay with that.
So you've already got a pilot that's working.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we've tweaked it through the years because it didn't work for certain, but it's pretty consistent. And it's the same pretty much for all builders and developers, so it's an even playing field as well for them. And that's what they really appreciated and wanted. The other thing that we've been working on is through our guest manual. Engineering implemented a pilot project with Sterling Ranch in the Solstice development to do what we call a multi-lot desk permit. And it used to be you have to do a desk permit for each and every residential home. What we're doing is, if you're a single family production type developer, builder, you can just do one big multi-lot permit, and it, you don't have to do the individuals anymore. And it saves them time, it saves them money, because we'll just propose to do one permit fee for the multi-lot instead of for each and every one. I think the permit fee probably for an individual desk permit, by the time you had the engineer prepare it and pull the permit, could range anywhere between $600 to $1,000, and that can add up for it, you know, depending on how many lots you have. So we're ready to incorporate that into our guest criteria. We've been piloting it. It's working. We have to work through a few details, like the permitting part of it and stuff, but we're ready to move forward with that as well.
Oh, great. Any questions for staff?
I don't know. It's kind of incredible. It's like, to me, it seems like just a breath of fresh air, frankly. Looking, and you said our customers. I love that. As opposed to, you know, our citizens.
Enemies? No.
Yeah. The people we're trying to build red tape for?
Yeah.
No, but looking at it from a customer kind of a service perspective, it was very refreshing for me. Did you get a lot of input from the builders of Douglas County? It was like when they say, I had one tell me once, they're like, we built this much paperwork, and then we start over for the second process, and all we did is change like a few words between this one and this one, but it's a whole different stack. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you've taken a lot of input from...
Well, you kind of gain it over time, and that's the reason why we identify it as an area that we could work. The PD processes that we have confounded me for many years. Mm. And working with Sterling Ranch, they are able to find lots of different places to try to work on fixing that. And so a lot of that translates into what we're trying to do.
Wow. I'm impressed. So cutting red tape is what it sounds like, and I love that.
Thanks, Commissioner. Additional comments?
Number of items here are things that builders have complained to me about, developers have complained to me about, so I think you're on the right track. Nothing stood up as a no. Absolutely, let's go for it. I think these are great opportunities. I mean, I'm not a home builder myself. I've never worked in that industry, so I can't really pick it apart. But again, I'm seeing things that I have gotten complaints about, so yeah, let's go for it.
You know, I don't disagree with my colleagues. I think the streamlining is great. It's really consistent with our retreat as a county, and you know, using the AI and other technologies, especially pilots that have been working, I think that makes a whole lot of sense. One area where I'm always cautious is abdicating the elected board's authority. So final approvals of significance, I'd be really reluctant to abdicate that. It's just an administrative sign-off. I really want to make sure that we're seeing that. As much as we trust and appreciate staff, I think anytime there's unilateral authority by non-elected individuals, it creates challenges. So I would want to retain a high degree of accountability and authority when it comes to those final approvals. But I think all the other streamlining mechanisms make a whole lot of sense, and I agree, identifying those we work with as customers is just a great, great outlook.
So similar to last one, it'd be a motion to begin with these concepts. I'm certainly not surprised on sort of board authority over site plans and things you articulated. We would further it and come back with a more fleshed out version.
Okay. Do you guys have what you need?
A motion would be great.
Okay. Then I would, if you two agree, I would appreciate a motion consistent with the comments we made.
Yeah, sure. Perhaps I let you do that.
You're good at this. Do you get all of that?
Well, continue with the right. I move to cut red tape.
Am I the only one doing work here? I'm kidding around. In light of the memo and presentation from staff, as far as the process and regulatory streamlining, if it pleases the board, I do have a motion to direct staff to proceed as presented with each one of the subsegments and to bring back to the board any changes that result.
Second. So we have a first and second on the floor. Any further discussion? I would ask for a friendly amendment consistent with my comments that we're making sure we're not abdicating the authority of elected officials to staff and direct staff to bring back revisions consistent with that comment.
Cool. I think I'd, no opposition necessarily to the nature of that friendly, just but I'd sort of like to see what they come up with, and then for our approval, which I think is consistent with the motion. However, absolutely, if the motion could reflect that we do, the board does want to approve any changes as recommended as a part of this process by senior staff.
I'll second the amended motion.
And we've got a commissioner that knows his Robert's rules. Good job. So we have a first and second on the motion that has been friendly amended, amended in a friendly manner. All those in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, and that motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
Cool.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Our next item, Mr. Chair, is the Saffron Road name change.
Yeah.
You've been working on this personally and asked that we bring this forward for some direction.
We are going to recommend, in light of the timelines that we're trying to meet, that we go ahead and bring this directly to the board for consideration. We were having some difficulty getting everybody involved, all the property owners out there, to be on board with the name change. We can, the board can, on their own, go forward and say we're going to make the name change. We can schedule it for April 8th, which I think meets your timelines, correct? Mm-hmm. And so I think with your approval, we would like to go ahead and start doing the referrals and the reaching out to make sure we get that noticed and set up for the April 8th meeting.
Well, thank you for that. By way of background, I think my colleagues are familiar that $20 billion aerospace industry mm-hmm. from France, locating right here in Douglas County, gratefully to a lot of the work from our Douglas County EDC executive and their staff. So this is great EDC work, and really planting our flag is one of our biggest projects as the Douglas County EDC. $20 billion is no small number, and the Christophe, who we know very well, approached me about, hey, do you think it might be possible to do this name change to New Vernon? In light of this investment, and wanted to bring that back to the board. It seemed like a wonderful opportunity, especially timing-wise, with the ribbon cutting that's happening in April. What are your questions, discussion?
What's the pushback? It looks, and I just Googled, I'm looking at a map of the area. That's the American Furniture Row House Road? Mm-hmm. Are they the ones providing the pushback?
It's not really pushback, it's just we haven't received comments back yet on if they oppose or like what's going on. So they'll still have that opportunity to come before you at the hearing to talk about those things, because they will be noticed. So we're just trying to make sure we make that timeline.
We're okay. Saffron has provided feedback that they're okay with it. Because I do know we have another aerospace company in that vicinity whom told me prior to their opening, completing their opening, they would not want that. So are we sure that Saffron is good with it?
Christophe, we have spoken with Christophe with Saffron. He is interested in doing it. We haven't heard from this other entity yet. We still may. That'll be the next steps of this process.
Oh no, when I talk about the other entity, the other space aerospace company will come to aerospace company. They wouldn't want their name on the road because of the nature of the work they were doing. Okay. But Saffron is good.
Yep.
Okay.
And New Vernon? Is the proposed name? Why is New Vernon?
Because Old Vernon is in France, where the company originated from.
Oh.
So they thought New Vernon.
Okay. Further discussion? Questions? Okay. I will accept the motion.
Can we go back to the memo?
We're going to try to serve on a map.
Sorry.
Did you want
this? The quickest process is request the determination by the Board of Commissioners at the public hearing on the 8th. So a motion would be to put it on our agenda for April 8th.
Correct.
Why does that require a motion?
In this case, it doesn't. We like to kind of have our process. So
because that the 8th is when we'll make the motion to actually do it.
The motion is just to capture if there's any board, make sure the board's, if you guys are good with that, we can just proceed. If you want to register a no or a yes for whatever reason, we can.
And then on the 8th, there'll also be public. We'll open it to the public.
Of course.
For public comment.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, we could do either way. I mean, in the past, we've directed things like this to to our public hearing, which might be helpful. And I think it might provide some assurance to our business partner that this is moving forward in this, our EDC, so they can make some plans.
Okay. Well, therefore, if the board is inclined, I'll move that we add this to our public hearing agenda for April 8th for additional motions.
I have a second.
So we have a first and second on the floor. Any further discussion? I think one of the reasons that this seems significant to me is, we're trying to expand economic development, particularly in aerospace, and particularly with this company. They're starting small-ish, but they have capacity to really expand. So if they're seeing this area as New Vernon, what a great welcome sign to say continue to be here. And at that level, I think it probably makes good sense to do this, so I'd support. And I thank my colleagues for their support.
It's prettier than Com Park.
I was going to say, it's also... Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, and that carries unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you for getting
the time. So appreciate it. Our last item, Mr. Chair, is hopefully the last stop again. Lieutenant, why don't you come up to the table? Based on the feedback last week, I think I'm on the other side, so I can actually look at the people talking to them.
Lieutenant, we're getting to see a lot of you.
That's okay. I've got a cold, so I'll try nothing else. I did check, just to make sure, but I don't want to get anybody
wrong. Right,
Japan and South Korea. Yeah, 14 days. So.
Which kind of put us in a bit of a spot because this is really Alan's baby, and when he was gone, I couldn't get any communication. So we've been trying to work. Now that he's back home, he's like, my God, Kelly, what have you done? So
he's got a couple. It's not my baby, trust me.
A couple technical changes that we'll make before it goes out on Friday with respect to typos and references, but also the big questions we have now is we're anticipating two motions, same ordinance, and Sheriff's Office is fine with leaving RVs as a $17 fine just because nobody's really interested in coming down hard on families with RVs, but with respect to the semis, $17 is just going to be, they're going to laugh and say, I'll pay that every day. Yeah. So we're trying to figure out what to do. Now, technically, under the statute, we have a $15 to $100 range for putting those on. We can go beyond that and just make it an offense of a traffic, not a traffic ordinance, although it's in our parking ordinance. We could do it separate. But what we're looking at is doing something with maybe $100. And if we have to go every day and do a $100 fine, they'll eventually do it. We're looking at putting in graduated. We're on by the third offense. They have to go to court, and that could result in more. And we're also questioning whether or not we want to impound that.
Do you guys have the red line in the memo? Do you have what you're holding? We're still looking at
Yes. I don't know if it's ready for presentation.
Yeah, it's rough.
It's pretty rough. Well, our preference would be to get direction on what you want to do and then get this back to you as soon as possible. But I don't have any idea what we want as far as at what point we want to impound or if we want to leave that alone. We've got impound laws that we can do, but generally, unless it's a parking in front of a fire hydrant, for example, or they're not paying their tickets for three tickets outstanding, but that's a 4 to 6 week wait because there's a court date set. and you can't say they're not going to pay it until that time has passed. So that could be a little while and leave a truck sitting there. We can go back and do a $100 fine every day. We can try to get a little bit off script from the statutes and just say it's $100 first time, second time's two, second time's three. This is the direction we need from the board so we can get you something that is nice and tidy.
Great. Questions?
I mean, I think the goal isn't to, these would be hard vehicles to even tow. So the goal is to get them to move it themselves.
Absolutely.
And I think the graduate fine, $100 first day, that sounds like a good motivation to get them to move it.
The other question that Alan had raised.
I think my preference would be to listen to the experts who...
Well, I think from the previous meeting, I apologize, my voice is like 5 octaves lower, maybe I should join the band, so I apologize. I think originally we were doing like 50, 100, 200 was the graduate fee that we had talked about that the board seemed like they were okay with, but we could do something like that and make that specific to the commercial vehicles. Now, the definition that's been used for commercial is any vehicle that's over 16,001 pounds. That's the definition that's been plotted in this. And I think if we did that, it would kind of put kind of a standard that, hey, we don't want you to have where it's so cheap they're not going to want to move the vehicle, and then that same person is going to now be upset with the sheriff's office, they're going to be upset with the commissioners that we didn't do anything about that. So it's really, we're looking for the guidance of what you feel. We could do it, leave it at $100 flat if that's what you guys feel is appropriate. The statute under the model traffic code allows that. You could then just do $100, $100, $100, what we would ask if that's the case. After the third violation, we mandate a court appearance, because if they're not moving the vehicle after three violations, that tells me that they're just going to go ahead and see what we do. That would make it easier for us to then make the person see a judge, and the judge could decide, hey, aren't you moving your rigs? Is there a reason why you decide to leave it there parked? That's kind of, I think, the bigger question there. I do know that Sergeant O'Hara kind of did a mapping of violations that have been occurring since 2022, and I think that was sent to the commissioners, maybe not. Again, this happened when I was gone, but it showed the northern corridor, and it stretches all the way from that Chatfield area all the way across to that northern area of Parker, is where we see those violations for either recreational or commercial. Again, our focus is more on the commercial, not the RVs. We understand families. Again, we'll be parking your RV. We're not. That's not our goal. I think most people, we give them a ticket, they're going to say, hey, would you please move it? They're going to be respectful and move that. So that's why we don't think that we want to be hard on that and do anything more than the $17, which the current sets. But on the commercial vehicles, that definition of commercial vehicles covers, and I think to meet to Commissioner Teal's deal, it's in those highly urbanized areas, not the southern areas that you were concerned about, so that they are exempt from that. And so there would be a definition that would be in compliance or in concert with Douglas County planning, because they do have a definition for highly urbanized areas under their planning. So we would use that as kind of the guideline, which pushes those districts that have been listed that are on the exhibits on the end. So again, we're looking for guidance from the commissioners to say, hey, what kind of fine structure would you like to see? Because quite frankly, it's a partnership. We're not out here to be making money off the community. We just want to make sure our community is safe. And if someone decides they want to make that unsafe, we want to change that thought process.
Mm-hmm. Questions from the board?
How big a fine? $100, $200, third time you go to...
Is that the... Can we just do frame this? So for today's discussion, we're just talking about the fee structure, right?
Yeah.
Or are we deviating from the last conversation?
Sure. So the last conversation is that we are making two amendments to the consolidated parking, mm-hmm. one for commercial, one for RV.
Right.
The commercial one we have pretty good consensus for. We added the RV, kind of reflect the same time to schedule and the same that was already existing in Highlands Ranch. So that's in there. I think the biggest draft changes or things that could be changed is what that fine or that punishment might be. And it could be for either. So if you want to keep it at $17 for the RVs, you could. You could make that higher. Because I think as a point of contact, it might be enough if the officer goes out there and says, hey, you're going to get a ticket for this, move your RV. They probably are going to move it. So you don't have to put a big fine on that. By contrast, if you have a semi parked in the neighborhood, $17 may not move that semi as a business case. So you may need to make that slightly higher. So $100, $200 day in court.
Well, I mean, this is just me. I would defer to law enforcement on this, and I think beginning with the end in mind, what we want is compliance.
Is that absolutely
right? And so, what are your recommendations? I mean, I like the idea of bifurcating between commercial and recreational.
Clearly, we do see a separation on that. I mean, that our goal is compliance, and so, quite frankly, we would be okay. The graduate is fine, but we're okay too to stay within that model traffic code and make it $100. That way it's consistent. Statute allows you to go from 15 to 100. Mm-hmm. Is 100 the end of the world? No, but like Kelly was saying, if you start stacking $100 tickets because they're not moving it, that does add up pretty quick. And so they may say, hey, I might want to move that. The only
so
ask.
You're saying ceiling of 100?
Well, $100. It's $100 straight up. But what I would ask of the board is that because we know that if you were, the way the system works, that 4 to 6 weeks, you could have somebody say, well, fine, I'll wait my time frame in the court. We can't do anything. We can't tow your vehicle. It sits there for 6 months, 8 months. And they're like, $300 is cheaper for me long run just to park it in my neighborhood.
Right.
And so what we'd ask of the board is that we'd look at maybe the compromise and say, after the third offense, we're going to make you have to go to court. You can't pay a $100 fine anymore.
I love that.
And then a judge can make a decision. Now, the judge under our model traffic code can give you up to a $1,000 fine. If the judge says, hey, you're not learning your lesson, they could do that. Probably not. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, hey, move your vehicle, but that would be up to the judge. But the statute says up to $1,000. That's why in the revision it says up to $1,000, because the judge makes that decision. Yeah. We don't.
What about us? So, Kelly, is that a way, do we have any autonomy around giving law enforcement relocation authority after the second or third offense?
It would be going a little outside of what, it would be risky. It would be susceptible to attack. If we don't stick strictly by the statute, I mean, the Model Traffic Code isn't a mandate that we have to adopt. It's something we can adopt, but it still creates limits. And the safety of it is everybody knows it. Nobody's going to fight it. We start doing something, towing, sooner than they think we should have, then we're going to have a defense that, hey, this is a power ordinance. We're not going to have the defense of, look, this is just a copy of state law. So if we want to roll the dice, yeah, we can do that. We might get challenged. That's the worst case scenario. We wouldn't have the security of having state law backing us.
What's the maximum fine that we have the authority to impose?
Well, that's the questionable thing. I think if we write it as an ordinance by itself and not attached to the Model Traffic Code, you could do up to $1,000. I mean, the statute's pretty broad on that. You can do more than just the standard.
Well, I don't like the, and I want to hear from my colleagues, but I don't like the idea of penalizing folks. But I would much rather you assess a fine against them that incentivizes them to move quickly versus you going through the headache of figuring out how to relocate and hire. I mean, how are you going to move a semi out to a cul-de-sac in Highlands Ranch? That's just, sounds like a headache. But if they're getting charged enough, that's going to hurt, and they're going to say, oof, we better not do this ever. But what do you guys think?
I think for the RV sides, a warning would be good, followed by, $17 is weird to me, like just $25.
You could make it more than that. I mean, you'd have to carve out and say what it is, because right now under a, and again, I apologize in the voice, a traffic A infraction, A or B, is set. So that's set to 17. But you could, you could, if you wanted to, you have the capability to do anything from 15 to 100. So you'd have to spell out that this violation under this area for RVs, recreational vehicles, would be this fine. So you'd have to spell that out in this section if you wanted that and say what it is. You couldn't just randomly pick what you wanted. You'd have to say, hey, it's $50. The only thing I would throw out there, you're right, 17 is a weird number. That's set by statute. That's why it's a weird number. It's 25 if you're actually on private property, 17 on public. And so 17 applies to this because vehicles are parked on public.
The other thing to keep in mind when you ask about warning is that for the RVs, the way it's set up, the ticket is the warning. They have to be 72 hours after we warn them.
Yeah, they still also have the 72 hours that has to be there. So I'm glad you brought that up. So they have the semi-trucks or the commercial vehicles, there is no warning. I mean, if it's there, it's in violation, unless it meets those criteria, the exemptions. And those exemptions, and we did add some additional things because the tow truck stuff's in there, which I think was in the original. Mm-hmm. But we added a service.
Critical service repair.
So you could have water, sewer. We think it's important if they're working in your neighborhood, those are off-limits vehicles because they're trying to take care of an infrastructure issue, and they're not, you can't cite them, and we wouldn't want to. And so we added that in there to say basically critical service repair is exempt because they're working in that area. And then it gave examples of power and water and that kind of thing. And there was already in there listed loading or unloading of moving vehicles. So we're covering areas that would be normal that would fall under that commercial. It's again, not the recreational. But the recreational, again, you have to have an even balance. And I think, as you as commissioners, you guys agree on that, is we don't want to be overbearing, but we also want to make people to understand and respect the neighborhoods they live in. And I think a lot of them are real, hey, can you please move your RV? That's always our first response. It's not to our best interest, because believe it or not, writing a $17, $25 ticket, we write those, and people still go to court on those, and that's taking our officer off the street for a $25 ticket because they want to prove a point. And quite frankly, that we're trying to change behavior. And so would you please move this because it kind of obstructs your street. It's not really a traffic hazard, but it's hard to see around. They're like, yeah, sure, I'll move it. That's 99% of the population.
Right.
And so do we want to make legislation that's going to be affecting the 1% that we're not seeing, that that's a huge issue right now? Because we could always readdress it later. Mm-hmm. But I think the sheriff's office is totally fine with a lower fee on that. We don't think that's the major issue. I think it'll help appease citizens that are upset about these recreational vehicles, because we can say, here's what we can do. But again, you don't want to penalize somebody who comes, you know, for the weekend with their family in the RV, mm-hmm. or they're loading the jet ski up for the weekend and they happen to be over the 72 hours. That's not what this is about. Mm-hmm. It's about, hey, would you please move that because it's affecting your neighbors. And that would always be our approach.
So give me the rubric you're recommending again on rec and commercial.
So it's $17 is what it's set, but if the commissioner wanted to do that higher, if he wanted to do it 25, he could. You'd have to spell that out.
So first ticket. They park the car on, then three full days go by. Someone complains, hey, it's been 4 days.
We would go and we'd clear the plate. We then would contact the registered owner and ask them to move it.
Okay.
That's our standard policy. We're not. It doesn't do us any good. It doesn't change behavior if I just throw a ticket on someone's windshield.
And then that, in the case, the rare case where they're like, "F you, it's Mike."
Right now, the way it's
I paid for that street.
$17 ticket, so they get a citation. They don't have to be present. If they don't, hey, I'm not meeting with you. It gets put on their windshield. $17. That fee doesn't increase the way this is written. It's $17 every time. If they don't actually comply, or they have, three or more non-compliances with those citations, so they don't go to court, they don't pay their fees, then that vehicle is subject to, under a normal MTC, for tow, because they're not following the model traffic code. We typically don't see that. I mean, we're not probably riding those. Yeah, but the fee doesn't go up. It's set at a fixed, doesn't increase. Recreational vehicle, $17, $17, $17. Doesn't change. So whatever the commissioners felt was appropriate on that, we're not opposed to $17. It is an odd fee. Quite frankly, the county's not trying to make money on people parking their RVs, and it's just a change behavior. It's the commercial vehicles we're concerned about.
So the first thing they get is just a warning.
Yeah, we clear the plate, and then we try to get a hold of the registered owner and say, is there any reason?
Call. It's just
yeah.
a contact.
Yeah, and a lot of times it's actually on the same street, so we're right. going up and knocking on the door.
And then the ticket would begin the first.
Yeah, right. Ticket's the first one, and it'd be $17. If we had to go back after the person tells us to go, you know, go pound sand.
No, if people aren't moving their car after a 3-day warning, it seems like 17 is way too low. I don't know what you guys think. You know, that seems like after 3 days.
Well, 3 days plus a warning, and then the ticket. So.
Oh, I heard that different. So
no,
if
it's 3 days and I say, hey, you need to move, and they don't, then they're going to get a ticket. So it would start off as a 17. So I go knock on the door, or we can't get a hold of them. The officer's going to go ahead and place a ticket on the windshield. So I hope that clarifies.
That first time.
Oh, okay. We're going to try to contact, but if we can't get a hold of you, we just don't drive away and leave it there. I mean, because the complaint's been filed. And so we always try to get a hold of the registered owner, because quite frankly, moving that ticket is the best solution. And that way we can talk to the citizen and say, hey, this really isn't the best for your neighborhood, and here's why. Most of them are like, not a problem, let's move it. And so 17, we're not opposed to that. It actually makes it so it's not going to be overly evasive to a citizen. They're not going to be upset of $17. You could have the person that's going to push us on and say, okay, fine, write me a whole bunch of $17 tickets. But if they don't comply, I don't want to pay my ticket. I don't want to go to court.
We could do a gradient, right? It doesn't have to be consistent.
It'd be a set under the model traffic code. So if you did that, it'd be anywhere from 15 to 100. So you would set that. So I guess you could gradate that. I mean,
yeah, you could do 15 first offense.
You could.
So I would suggest 25, 75, 150. Like, you don't get it on the third one. Now we're, I mean, candidly, wealthiest county in the state. I don't think anybody's really bad an eye about even 150, frankly.
So model traffic code, if we do it under the current way, the highest would be 100. So you could do 15, whatever. Yeah, 100.
Maybe 25, 50, 100.
Yeah.
I like 25, 50, 100. Mm-hmm. I also like the RV code. Yeah, I think more commercial, more on the commercial side, we're more gradient.
Mm-hmm. Well, one other thought. I know you guys are short on time. Alan had mentioned that my understanding from our last meeting was that for RV it was only to apply to Highlands Ranch and Sterling Ranch, and so that's all we have included. And Alan's like, well, wait, we get some complaints from the people in Stonegate, for example. Do we want to expand that now, or do we just want to leave it as is and let them come to us and ask us to add it?
That kind of applies to your area. This is one that actually my sergeant, if you hadn't seen, he kind of pulled data. I apologize, I don't know what's been given to you. they kind of show the areas of complaints within the northern corridor. If you can see, it is really northern corridor, urban residential area, and you can see it clearly is more that Highlands Ranch, Chatfield area, but you can see there's quite a few dots on that
Each dot is one complaint.
There could be multiple. It's actually 77 were same locations, and it was 97 total complaints.
I think I would trust Doug over there to send an email to the proper person throughout the county to say, hey, do you want to be part of this?
So the only thing that we would throw out there, I throw to the commissioners, I do like the approach of doing the districts that are highly urbanized areas. It makes it easier because our concern, if we have people all of a sudden say, hey, we want to be added to this, it complicates the system for the commissioners. It complicates for us because those are things that's a new hearing every time somebody wants to be a part of that.
When is this going to a business hearing? Be a business meeting?
Well, that's
whatever you guys wanted on that. There's no.
So here's a thought. For these large, especially in my district, for those larger areas of interest where we're getting complaints, obviously we can see it from the dots. So in addition to Sterling Ranch and Highlands Ranch, let's have Doug or staff reach out to those larger areas of interest where we're getting complaints, see if they want to be added to that same rubric that we have for Sterling Ranch, Highlands Ranch, and then let's add them before we go to a business meeting.
It's currently set for the 25th, right?
25th.
So do we want to pull it and put it back a little bit?
So it is.
It got told. I don't know if it got put back on there.
Sorry, I made a noise. I'm just thinking about the public outreach associated with this to avoid confusion.
That's why I asked.
We will not be ready by the 25th with everything else.
Oh, perfect. That's what Alan was wanting anyway.
Okay. My understanding was that we wanted to do this somewhat quickly because we've been working on this for a while. If the board would like to take more time, because Commissioner Van Winkle's receiving complaints in his neighborhood and he would like to have his addressed. If the board would like more time, we could do a more thorough outreach, we could do a lot more education, but that would take time. This is an ordinance that will take two readings. So you would have the natural, it doesn't take effect immediately, and you'd have a month thereafter. So you'd have a period of six weeks.
Jeff, if we have to amend the ordinance to reflect the needs of these other communities, what is that process?
Well, if we're adding
right
after the fact,
right,
it's just a motion, just like we do, for example, if RTD wants us to pick up in one of their lots or if Highlands Ranch.
Like a motion in a posted meeting anytime.
Yeah.
That's the way we set this up
for that ease, because readopting a new ordinance every time somebody wants to be added, it's publication, two readings. So we made that very simple.
Well, I would support, in the interest of supporting your community and the complaints, getting it done right away if we can, if you agree. And then if I think it proactively we should reach out to those areas of interest that the lieutenant identifies, and then we'll have that posted to make a motion when we need to make that motion.
So we're sticking with the 25th for the first reading, or are we not?
Unless there are objections from the board, I'm not hearing any issues with it.
I think we do it.
Yep.
So leave Exhibit B, just for my clarification, the primary urban areas of Highlands Ranch and Chatfield, those are the two that will be on for the recreational. It's not you already have it all listed under the commercial, so that's covered. Mm-hmm. It's just the recreational vehicle area that's not.
Oh, Sterling Ranch, Highlands Ranch, is it?
Chatfield is.
Chatfield covers
both.
Oh,
got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's weird. It doesn't sound like it does cover.
So we'll have the next week to do the business meeting for the first reading. We'll have another reading, the final reading, 2 weeks later, and then we'll take effect for 30 days. So we will have a period of 2 months to do education. 7 weeks.
Yeah.
And just to chime in a little bit in the proactive, if this is posted as part of the agenda for the 25th, whenever that's going to be posted Monday, I need to be ahead of that date to say the board is considering these changes. Otherwise, somebody else is going to be out saying that the board is considering this and spinning kind of their own narrative. So I would like to be able to proactively tell the community that this will be on the agenda and this is why and this is who's included. So
do you have enough time?
No.
Not for the 25th, it's too soon.
I want to be supportive, but we also have home rule on that agenda. We have two other big news items on that agenda, so I just want to be sensitive to...
What is the date of the next business meeting?
The 8th, I believe.
The 8th? Mm-hmm. Kevin, is that too much time? Because we could always do a special meeting.
Whatever, Kara. I mean, she knows her needs better than I do. Just in my thinking, when it's two readings, it's going to be...
Well, two readings and 30 days after. So I appreciate what Caroline's saying. I just was trying to be responsive to the question.
And I get that, too. I just, learning from today and some of the stuff we're experiencing with Sunday one, I know as soon as there is something out, especially with something like looking for our needs. Now, that being said, I could get a staff member on it and do at least a brief you know, maybe I can work with Kelly and you and turn something around quickly to publish Monday, the day before the business meeting, because then we would have a link to, so people could read. You know,
it's legislative too, so it can be way predetermined. You can say that you're going to support this on Tuesday. Mm-hmm.
Word? First?
You want to do it, we'll get it done.
Well, I know, but we're putting a lot of pressure on you too, so I think, you know, if we need to push it out a little, we can. We can always do a special meeting if we really need to, just to be responsive to you and your needs.
Yeah, it'd be nice also to have the whole camping season covered under one law and rule. But
what are you thinking? Is there a date? What for you? What's your?
When does camp? When are campers coming out of those storage units and parking spots?
Memorial Day.
Yeah. Okay. Let's. Can we aim for Memorial Day at least?
April 8th.
When is Memorial Day?
Yeah, at the end of May.
Mm-hmm. Is April 8th too late?
Last Monday in May, so we should have plenty of time, even if it's an April 8th hearing day.
Yeah, April 8th, and we'll do another one on the 22nd, and then we'll take... We can contemplate saying this is a safety issue, and that we can make it effective immediately. Mm.
Whatever you guys think, it's just a matter. I'm just glad we're getting it done, and I'll get a ticker tape parade someday from the HRCA, and all those residents are like, what the hell? I've lived here for 30 years, it's never been allowed.
Okay. Well, maybe in the interest of allowing staff the professional courtesy and the time to get this together, let's do April 8th.
Thank you.
If the board is supportive of that, and then maybe Jeff can get creative and help us cross the finish line.
We can call this a safety issue and have it take effect immediately.
Great.
And then I think on the commercial side, like 100 for the first one, 200 every day thereafter. Does that sound reasonable? Or like 250?
Yeah. What's the max on commercial?
Well, to be safe, it should be 100. That's what we're thinking.
If we keep it under model traffic code, it'd be 100 every time. And then the third time, they would go to court. If we write it outside the limit of the model traffic code, which would be a separate ordinance, then you could put whatever you'd like to put on that.
Why don't we just do a separate ordinance? Is that hard? You want to get a challenge?
We could pull that out. We had to first try to keep it all the same just because of the problem of printing up tickets with the ordinance on it. But we found out that's not quite as big a problem as we once thought it was. Oh. So if you want separate ordinances, we can certainly do separate ordinances.
And you have more time now. Strategy for next week.
Well, if you think the court summons is effective, then maybe that's more effective than a higher fine.
Yeah, we could just go 100, 100, 100 to court.
Yeah, 100 actually adds up, and they go to court. I think judges typically don't like it when people don't comply.
Okay.
And they usually teach them less respectfully. They're like, hey, is there a reason why after 3 violations, you're not getting the clue? Mm-hmm. And that usually solves the problem. Hopefully we get it before then, where a person says, yeah, you're right. Now, some of these complaints we have, it's really residents intentionally trying to mess with their neighbors, and that's really what has brought us to where we are right now.
I have to be at Grace Chapel in 15 minutes. Let you run this, or do you guys have some direction for staff?
So it sounds like 100 court summons?
After 3.
And then for what was the RV determination?
You can do 17. You can graduate that, or if you want to spell it out, or leave it at 17.
I thought we said 25, 50, 100.
Is the board
okay? How do you feel about that, George?
I'm opposed.
Oh, boy. this conversation, jeez.
Would you be okay with
I could have told you beforehand.
You could have, I know. Well, that's fun.
Would you be okay with the current $17 after? Well, I guess, I mean.
Tell you what, the commercial that's graduated with third trip to... see the judge. RV.
You're just opposed to no matter what?
Yeah, I'm not touching the RV stuff.
What was HRCA charging prior?
They used to be able to run under HOA violations, and that's what they would do. Because weren't allowed to park any vehicles for a lot of the areas. It had to be in your driveway. And when that changed in 22, they lost that ability, and so now people are parking in the street. They can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Well, this is where I go back to my conclusion originally, which is it is so dependent on the neighborhood. And I really like how we had it before, that it was neighborhood dependent.
Absolutely.
you know, HOAs would set their own rules. So this, it's just put us in a tough spot.
We could definitely address that through home rule.
I know.
But the model traffic code doesn't permit that. So we will allow them to opt in. If we went back to their enforcement, then they would have been forcing themselves and they wouldn't have the benefit of having the sheriff to call.
Right.
So that's the biggest benefit. So at the moment, you get a cop to come out, which is better than having.
See, the problem is you have a lot of neighborhoods that may not care. I have a lot of neighborhoods in my district that absolutely would care about RVs.
If we put it in our home rule charter that we are delegating down to the HOAs and giving the HOA enforcement, I promise to not speak against it.
We're definitely going to do that.
Yeah, and that's our goal. The entire reason we're having this conversation is because the state stuck their big nose into our county.
That's exactly right. Well, I'll let you two figure it out. I'll turn the reins over to you. I'm going to try to get up to...
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thanks so much, you guys.
Commissioner, that's a Castle Rock address.
I believe so, yes. It's 11 minutes on the map.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Get an escort.
Because there's a Grace Chapel.
You just need to put some lights on your car, right?
That's interesting. There's a Grace Chapel up north, but this is a Castle Rock one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, just let Ellen give you the
answer. We probably could,
All right, what do you guys need?
I think we've got it. You want to sum it up? Somebody, I mean, we're moving it to the 8th. We're going with the 100-100 jail.
All right. 300.
How about visit to the judge?
Three citations. After the third, then the next one would be to the courts.
With respect to RVs, my understanding is you're going to say no matter what. So if it's going to be based on these two votes, then put it the way they want it, the 25, 50, and 100. And then staff is going to get back with respect to any other areas that want to be included in the RV.
I think I'd be okay as 25.
Just make it 25 flat. The good thing is your areas, Commissioner, they're not actually listed in there because it's up to the northern corridor for the highly those residential areas, so it wouldn't affect the southern that you're worried about. So
still maybe tracking. Predict the vote.
I get it. People think this is a matter of principle. That's okay. It's a matter of principle. All right. Sounds like you guys have what you need.
Yes, I'm so glad. It's been a long road.
Thank you,
Gerald.
Anything else? We'll get a full suite of materials ready in partnership with legal so that when it's posted before the 8th, we have what we need for HOAs.
Are there any specific residents you would like us from the sheriff's office to kind of like calm some things down? I know we have some voiceful people in the northern
border.
Actually,
do you have a card?
I'll give you a card, absolutely. And then you can, because we've had to do that, say, hey, we're working on stuff with the commissioners. Please be patient. There's two that I'm aware of. One is the HOA president in Grandview Estates. That's one that I know has been very vocal with the commissioners. And then we have Stonegate, which is another one.
Oh, okay.
Where that HOA.
Just regular folks. Hans Range.
Now our cards are changing again, but you'll have my information on it. So
cool. There you go. I'll shoot you a text just so you have mine. Wait, is this your cell?
That's going to be the office, but I can give you my cell. It's got an email. Yep. You ready?
Yep.
303.
Okay.
435-4577.
Okay. Thank you,
Mr. Teal. I think you may not have one of my cards. There you go.
Hey. Thanks, so.
I'm always happy when a text will beat a phone call.
But those are things that we can always. Just meeting with the resident helps solve.
That's okay.
Working on solutions. But when the HOA changed the laws, it really did a lot of damage.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
And then they
most
expect.
People just don't know about. It.
No.
I think we're good now.
So, well, thank you very much for your time.
I think we're good.